Good evening, everybody. Before we start, let us pay homage to the Buddha by reciting Namo Tassa 3 times. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa. Today we shall continue the difficult part of this sutta. Although it's difficult, but it's very exciting. To me, it's very exciting. The sutta simile of the snake. Now we come to the standpoints for views. I would read first what Buddha say, then I will explain in detail. Page 229. Because there are these 6 standpoints for views. What are the 6? Here, because an untaught ordinary person who is unskilled in the Dharma regards material form thus. This is mine. This I am, this is myself. And he regards the feeling, perception, formation, and so on as this is mine, this I am, this myself. Okay, it is very common. It's very common for an untaught ordinary person to regard material form as this is mine, this I am, this is myself. Why? Because he is untaught. because he is not skillful in the Dharma. Therefore, he regards wrongly. For example, here, material form. If a person is well taught and is skillful in the Dharma, he understand what is this material form. Material form is body, our body. So what's this body? Body is only conceptual, convention terms. It's only concept. What actually exists in this body? 4 elements, meditate. 4 elements. Earth elements, fire elements, earth element, water element, fire element, and wind element. So what is this earth element? Earth element has characteristic of hardness. So if you touch your body, whatever you feel hardness of bone, teeth, skeleton and so on, all these are characteristic of earth element. And what is water element? An earth element serves as a foundation for the other existing 3 elements. And what's water element? What water element has characteristic of cohesion. Our body, our organs in the body, our limbs, head, and all the organs can cohere together, and all these organs do not collapse. Why? Because of cohesion, which is the characteristic of water element. So if you understand in this way, you will not say, water element is myself, belong to me. No. It's only when we are untaught we are not skillful in the Dharma, then we think body is mine, I am myself. Okay, then earth element, water element, fire element. What is fire element? Fire element has the characteristic of maturing, mature. Fire element makes our hair become wrinkled. makes our skin become wrinkled, makes our hair turn to grey, white, and so on. And fire element cause what has eaten, what had eaten, chewed, drunk, digested. Without fire element, all this food cannot be digested. Therefore, Chinese, we emphasize eat hot things because heat help digestion. That's reason why we like to eat hot things. Because fire element, it helps digestion and it warms up the body. Without fire element, this body cannot alive. Just like when including the, let's say, fruits, because of fire element, the fruit banana from green turn to yellow, then later on gradually become rotten. All this changing is due to fire element. So our body also, the heat element, fire element maintains our body. And the last one, wind element. Wind element has the characteristic of pushing motion. With wind element, we can flex our hand, stretch the body, flex our hand, we can stand, we can sit down, we can move our head and so on. So all this four elements work together to assume a physical body. And hardness, earth element, is the foundation for the other three elements. And water element coheres all the organs, limbs, and hands, and so on. So the form can appear, the physical form can appear. And these four elements are not mine. I am myself. They are the effect of four causes. What are the causes for arising of four elements in the body? First is karma, past karma. So your four elements and my four elements are different, although the characteristics are the same. Hardness, softness are the same, but your four elements and my four elements appear sometimes differently. For example, I have poor digestive fire. You may have good digestive fire. Why? Because of karma. Because of karma past, done in the past, that cause I have weak digestive fire element. So some people have very strong fire elements, so he easily get angry because of excessive fire element and so on. So karma produce four elements in the body. And another factor is our mind. Our mental state also can affect the four elements in the body. For example, when the mind is peaceful, then the body is calm. When the mind is very hot, get very angry, then the body also become agitated. And the wind element also become strong and body start to shake and so on. So our mental state affect our body. Good mental state produce good element in the body, healthy element. Bad mental state like anger, greed, jealousy, competition and so on, then produce very rough, very unsettled element in the body. Another reason for the four elements to arise in the body is food. The food we take every day also will affect the four elements in the body. So if we don't take food, let's say for a few days, then the element become very weak. The four elements in the body become very weak. So this is how elements and food are related. And the last one is temperature. Temperature, external temperature. For example, during the winter, and the four elements in the body change. During the summer, the four elements in the body is not same as during the winter. Therefore, the four elements in the body, is only concept. What actually exists are four elements. And they are not self, not mind. They are not mind, not I am, not myself. Because they are the product of causes. And this product, this causes sometimes beyond our control. For example, temperature external, beyond your control. Right? Karma has done in the past, already beyond our control. So in the teaching of the Buddha, what is beyond our control, we say it is not a self. When we say a self, we mean permanent self that can be controlled. And if four elements are beyond our control, are affected by so many causes, then we say it's not myself, not I am. So only the untaught ordinary person who is not skillful in the Dharma, who do not learn the Dharma, then they will regard material form, or they will regard body as I, as mine, I am myself. This is one of the standpoint for view. First, regard the body as I, mine, myself. Okay, the second standpoint for views, this untaught ordinary person regard feelings as mine, I am myself. What is feeling? Feeling is what is felt. What is felt? And feeling has the characteristic of experience the desirable and undesirable aspect of an object. For example, you are eating chocolate. Chocolate has an agreeable aspect. People like it, delicious. And while you are enjoying the chocolate, eating the chocolate, it's not you enjoying the pleasant aspect of the chocolate. It is mental factor of feeling itself, because feeling has the function of experience the desirable aspect or undesirable aspect of an object. So when you are enjoying chocolate, it's feeling itself, experience the desirable aspect of that chocolate. Feeling is not a self. Feeling is just a mental factor. Similarly, when you are eating, for example, when somebody abuse you, so this unpleasant sound strike your ear. You feel very unpleasant, very unpleasant. So at that moment, it's not you feel unpleasant. It is unpleasant feeling itself experiences the undesirable aspect of that abusive word. If you identify feeling, that unpleasant feeling, it's myself. How can you free from that suffering? But if you think that, it's just an unpleasant feeling experience, or unpleasant feeling is experiencing the undesirable aspect of that abusive word, then you can free yourself from suffering. Because you do not identify unpleasant feeling as myself, as I am. And if feeling is not a self, what is feeling? Feeling is just a mental factor. And where, how the feeling arises? Feeling arises owing due to contact, the abusive word contacts the ear because of this impingement contact. Then unpleasant feeling arises. When there's no contact, no impingement, then there's no unpleasant feeling. So feeling is also an effect of certain cause. What is cause and effect? What has cause and effect relationship cannot be regarded as self. Okay? So, but untaught ordinary being do not skillful in the Dharma. Therefore, whatever feeling arises in him, whether pleasant, unpleasant, neither pleasant nor unpleasant, only three types of feeling. So whatever feeling arises in him, then he regards this is mine with craving. My feeling, my good feeling, my pleasant feeling, my with craving. And he regards this is I am with conceit. And he regards this myself, this feeling is myself, this unpleasant feeling, pleasant feeling is myself with wrong view of self. Atta dicchi. So this is the second standpoint for views. Okay, the third one, he regards perception as I am myself. Perception is also mental factor. Perception, perceive what is blue, what is red, what is tall, what is high. So perception, once perceived, it make a mark. Perception, perceive something, then it makes a mark, so that perception can recognize what has seen, heard, tasted, touched before. Next time, perception can recognize it again. This is the function, characteristic of perception. But if we are not skillful, if we do not understand correctly what is perception, then we identify perception as I, mind, myself. Oh, I see, I remember what I have heard, I remember what I have seen. It's like that, it's such and such. So we regard perception as I, myself, again, with craving, conceit, and wrongdoing. So this is the third standpoint for views. Okay, so far, are you with me? The fourth one, formation. Formation here refer to volitional formations, karmic formations, volitional formations. Any action done with volition is called karma. So this formation can refer to bodily karma, bodily action, verbally action, and mentally actions. So our bodily action can be good, can be wholesome and unwholesome. For example, killing is unwholesome, stealing is unwholesome, uttering harsh speech is unwholesome. But sometimes we also tell good words, tell gentle words, all is unwholesome. So whatever actions done with intention, whether physically, verbally, and mentally, we regard them as this is mine, this I am, this is myself, and fall and trap in the personality view again, trap in the identity view again. So this perception also become the four standpoints for views. I do not go into detail because this sutta is very long. There are so many points, difficult point that I need to talk. Okay, the fifth one, Buddha said, he regards what is seen, heard, sensed, cognized, encountered, sought, mentally pondered thus. This is mine, this I am, this is myself. So here, what is seen refers to seeing consciousness. What is heard refers to hearing consciousness. What is sensed refers to body consciousness. And what is cognized, encountered, and mentally pondered refers to mind consciousness. So when the same consciousness arises, my eye, for example, my eye sees aloka. So seeing consciousness arises. And perception helps me to recognize she is aloka. Then the karmic formation says, oh, I like her. So all this pop up together. And why seeing consciousness arise? Why? Because of causes. What are the causes? First, because of his presence as an object. And secondly, because I have eyes. Right? Without eye, I cannot see. Third, because I pay attention. I pay attention to her, so I see. And the fourth, because of light. Without light, if it's in the darkness, I cannot see her. So when all these factors are fulfilled, then eye consciousness arises seeing her. So can I see eye consciousness is myself? I am, is mine? Cannot. When you say is I is mine, is I am, is myself, it means that you can control all the process. But no. Eye consciousness arises depending on these factors. When these factors are fulfilled, then eye consciousness arises seeing something. Therefore, it's not advisable to say that what is seen, what is heard, what is sensed, what you mentally ponder about as this myself, this I am, this. So this consciousness, different type of consciousness, we have six type of consciousness. Seeing consciousness, hearing consciousness, smelling consciousness, tasting consciousness, body consciousness, and mind consciousness. All these consciousness are not to be regarded as this mind, this I am, this myself. But if we are untaught in this way, then we will regard it in the wrong way. Okay? And the last one, the sixth, number six standpoint for views, namely, this is self. This, the world. And after that, I shall be permanent, everlasting, eternal, not subject to change. I shall endure as long as eternity. These two he regard thus. This is mine, this I am, this myself. In this view, this self, this world, this eternal, when I pass away, I shall be eternal. This type of view also he regard it as this is mine, this I am, this myself. This type of view is called eternalist view. Eternalist view. I think for Christians, when they say they reborn in heaven, become eternal.
It's also one type of eternalist view. So now, the question comes, how this type of view, how the eternalist view comes? Nothing arises without cause. So how this eternalist view comes about? So if you study the Dikha Nikaya, the long discourse of Buddha, chapter 1, Brahma Jala Sutta, Buddha gives 62 types of wrong view. Why all this wrong view comes about? Come about. One is eternalist view. Buddha said, the reason why the eternalist view arises in the world. Buddha said because in the past, some people, they develop very deep concentration due to their strenuous effort. So they develop, they practice jhana, up to first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, up to eighth attainment, arupa jhana, immaterial jhana. Then they start to see, because of deep concentration, they start to see their past life. And they see one life, two life, three life, 10 life, 100 life, 40 life, 400 life, 500 life, and so on. And he also saw, in that life, I was so and so, my clan was so and so, my food was such and such, my name was such and such, and I died there. When I die, I reappear in the same world again. When I die there, I realize there again. Because some deva, they die in the deva loka, then they realize in the deva loka again. No? Some people, they reborn human, then next time they reborn human again. So when he see, I died there, then I realize there again. Then after that, he meditate again, attain jhana, then he saw himself die again, realize there again, die again, realizes there again. Therefore, the view comes. The self is eternal. The world is eternal because they arise in the same world. He did not see the world come to destruction. So he hold the view because self. Because I see myself, we arise again, we arise again, we arise again. How many millions lifetime? Therefore, self, myself, self is eternal. The world, and he, since he re-arrives in the same world, therefore the world is also eternal. This is how the eternalist view comes about. And because he did not develop to see the future, and because he did not develop the wisdom to see the cessation of mind and matter. He did not have this wisdom to see the cessation or to see the nirvana, where the body and mind come to complete cessation. Therefore, he holds the wrong view of eternal self. This means that his knowledge is partial. It's not full, not fully comprehended. His knowledge is not full to comprehend. Past and future. So what you see is only partially. Therefore, the wrong view comes about. And some people, the Buddha say, another reason why eternalist view comes because some people are logician, reasoner. He just think according to his line of thought. Self is eternal. World is eternal. When I pass away, it is eternal. So out of this reason, the eternalist view comes. And this person also regard this view. He also hold on to this view. And therefore it becomes a standpoint, the 6 standpoints for views. So those are the 6 standpoints for views. Be clear? Okay, let's move on.
But some people, or a well-taught noble disciple who has regard for noble ones, who always associate with noble ones, who hear the correct Dharma, who hear the true Dharma, who is skillful in the true Dharma, do not regard material form, feeling, perception, formation, consciousness as I, as my, as myself. And he did not, and he also, he does not regard the self is eternal. The world is eternal. And he does not regard he will be permanent, everlasting, eternal, not subject to change, or endure as long as eternity. And this view also be this standpoint of view, self is eternal, world is eternal. And this standpoint for views also, he does not regard this is mine, this I'm not, this I am, this myself. So since he did not regard in this way, then he is not agitated about what is non-existent. This six standpoint of views is all based on personality view, identity view that regards as a permanent self, a self. So if a person does not regard in this way, so when Buddha talked about Nibbana, cessation of mind and matter, cessation of body and mind, no more, then he will not feel agitated due to fear of losing a self or due to craving for a self. Only those who attach to this personality view, those who think that self, a person, a self, a she and he, and when Buddha talked about Nibbana, destruction of craving, the cessation of mind and matter, then only those who cling to self will feel agitation when Buddha talked about Nibbana. But for anyone who has no attachment, who has no wrong view to self, when Buddha talked about Nibbana, he is not agitated. Is it clear or not? Okay, I think I would like to give an example. Last month, in April, I was in China. So, a student asked me, he said, "Sister, you say there is," he said, "when Arahant enter into Parinibbana, after that, where he goes? Very good. This question bothers people very much. And this question comes, why this question comes? This question reflects how human beings cling to a doctrine of self. Therefore, to him, when Arahant passes away, Parinibbana, where he goes? So he already assumed there is a self, where he goes? So to answer, if I say no self, he certainly not satisfied, right? He will not satisfied. Therefore, I have to give simile, metaphor. I say, okay, suppose there are a bundle of sticks, burning. Sticks, wood are burning. When the fire extinguished, when all the sticks finish burning, then the fire extinguished. Where the fire goes? How you answer? Where the fire goes? They also cannot answer. Is that
just extinguished. He doesn't, the fire just extinguished. Similarly, when the Arahant come enter into Parinibbana, where he go? No, just extinguish. Then why extinguish? Why the fire extinguish? Because the stick, the wood, have finished, right? The wood that sustained the fire, the burning of fire, had finished. Similarly, why Arahant after Parinibbana, why we say he extinguished? Because the fuel is considered F-U-E-L, the fuel of ignorance and craving that sustained his life had extinguished, had burned up, finished. Therefore, no more, no new arising. And then finally they told me, "This sister, before that I aim for arahantship. Now after listen to your explanation, I don't want to become arahant anymore." I don't want it extinguished. Nothing. No more. No. I don't want to become arahant anymore. This shows what? This shows that craving for, I direct to him, this is your craving for assistance. Craving for assistance. And precisely, craving for assistance is the origin of all suffering. It's the second noble truth. Now, for noble truth, the origin of all suffering is craving for assistance. So after my lecture, 7 days retreat in China, then I went to another town. Similarly, this question comes to me again. I gave the same answer again. And this lady who practiced very, very hard told me again, "Sister, before that I aimed so much for arahantship. Now I don't want. I don't want anymore." Same thing. Same thing happened for different person. So for my trip to China, it really shocks me that how strong craving, not only craving for assistance and craving for self, these two, in fact they are related, because you craving for assistance because there is a self. So I can see how deep rooted this wrong view of self and craving for existence were. Now they know already. They don't want to become arahant. They prefer go around the cycle of samsara again and again and again. And why they prefer go around the cycle of samsara again and again? Because they do not see the fault, the danger of cycle of rebirth. They do not suffer enough. Another word. They do not suffer enough in order to say goodbye to the samsara. They still feel that with this mind and body, I can enjoy one life after another life. And because of this one, Buddha was abused for teaching annihilation. Now during Buddha's time, this sutta also says that Buddha was accused or abused teaching annihilation. We will reach this part later. Okay. So if a person do not since he regards the five aggregates are not mine, not I am, not myself, he is not agitated about what is non-existent. Because he do not have the view of self, eternal self. So when you do not have the view of eternal self, when Buddha say Nibbana, oh, he said, good, fine. Nibbana is just a cessation of the cause for me. When the cause come to complete cessation, there's no more effect. So he understand in this way. He understand conditionality instead of rather than permanent self. Okay. Next one, education. So when this was said, a certain bhikkhu asked the Blessed One, "Venerable Sir, can there be agitation about what is non-existent externally?" Here, what is non-existent externally other than one's mind body? One's mind body, external things like our property, wife, husband, family, our possession, our job, and so on, all we call externally. Then Buddha said, there can be bhikkhu. Here, someone thinks thus, when they have wife, son, family, they have job, property, house, car, and they think, Allah, I had it, I got it. Full of joy, I got it. They hope, they cherish the hope, I have it, and so on. But when he had all these things, external things, family, wife, children, a house, car, and job, and so on, he was overjoyed. But as we know, all these things are impermanent. All these things are impermanent. We cannot possess it all the time. Sometimes change may occur. Our family member will leave us, or pass away, or die in an accident. We will lose our job. We will lose our car, our house. Now it's very common in America, right? So when you had it, you overjoy, and never bear in mind impermanent. Then once you lost it, then Buddha said, and he sorrows, laments, grief, and beat his heart, and so on. This is how there is agitation about what is non-existent externally. Okay, then the monk asked again, Venerable Sir, can there be no agitation about what is non-existent externally? Buddha said, yes, of course. Someone when they get something, when they get something, the property, car, house, wife, family, and so on, then they do not think, Allah, I had it, I got it. They do not think in this way, because they know all these are temporary. My wife, my children, my home, my job, my house, my car, all these are temporary. I have it temporary only. So he thinks in this way. So he bear the impermanence in mind. So when he really lost it, then he do not feel sorrow, lamentation, grief, and despair. So this is how there's no agitation about what is non-existent externally. Then Buddha continue, the monk continued to ask, Venerable Sir, can there be agitation about what is non-existent internally? Just now we talked about externally, now what's internally? Can there be no agitation? There can be bhikkhu, the Blessed One said. Here, someone has the view. This is self. This is the world. After that, I shall be permanent, everlasting, eternal, not subject to change. I shall endure as long as eternity. He hears the Tathagata, he hears the Buddha, or a disciple of the Tathagata teaching the Dharma for the elimination of all standpoints, decisions, obsessions, adherence, and underlying tendency for the steering of all formations. I mean, all formations do not arise anymore. And for the relinquishment of all attachment, attachment to a self, attachment to existence, attachment to view, attachment to rights and riches, and so on. And for the destruction of craving, for dispassion, for cessation, for nibbana. Then he thinks thus, so I shall be annihilated. So I shall perish. So I shall be no more. Then he sorrows, grief, laments. This is how there is agitation about what is non-existent internally. So if you cling to a permanent self, cling to the world, when you hear Buddha talk about nibbana, relinquishment of all attachment, then you will feel very sorrow. So I shall not attach. So I shall be annihilated. So I shall be no more. Then there's agitation. Agitation owing to fear of losing a self or craving for self. Okay. Then the monk asks again, can there be no agitation about what is non-existent internally? Yes, there can be. Buddha said, here, someone does not have the view, this self, I shall, this world, I am, the self is eternal, I shall endure as long as eternity. He does not have such view. Why he does not have such view? Can be two reasons. First, he is skillful in the Dharma. He is well taught in the Dharma. Thirdly, maybe he experienced himself through his inside knowledge. Everything is only cause and effect relationship. Whatever arises in the mind and body is just causal relationship. So what appears in his mind is just cause and condition. Therefore, he does not have the view, the itself, the world, I shall be eternal. Because he only sees cause and condition. He knows when the cause ceases, the effect will cease. So he do not see a person, a being, but he only sees cause and effect relationship. Therefore, when you hear about Buddha say the Dharma is for the elimination of all standpoints, decision, adherence, and underlying tendency, for the stealing of all formations, for the relinquishment of all attachment, for the destruction of craving, for dispassion, for nibbana, then he does not think thus, I shall be annihilated, so I shall perish, so I shall be no more. He does not think thus. Then, because he does not think thus, he does not sorrow, grieve, lament. This is how there is no agitation about what is non-existent internally. Okay, is it too difficult? Is it too difficult for you? Can you follow? Oh, okay, then we continue. Then the Buddha now, after talking about all this cause and condition, elimination of standpoint of views, then Buddha start to talk impermanence and non-self. And Buddha said, Bhikkhu, you may well cling to that doctrine of self. That would not arouse sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair in one who clings to it. But do you see any such doctrine of self? Bhikkhus, no. Bhikkhus, no, Venerable Sir. Good, Bhikkhus. I too do not see any doctrine of self that would not arouse sorrow, lamentation, pain, despair in one who clings to it. So if you cling to any doctrine of self, you believe in the self, so you will end up in suffering, Buddha said. Then Bhikkhu, the Buddha Buddha said, Bhikkhus, they being a self, would there be what belongs to myself? Yes, sure, Venerable Sir. Or, there being what belongs to a self, would there be myself? Yes, Venerable Sir. Because, since a self and what belongs to a self are not apprehended. Now we have explained already, all are cause and condition. So self and myself are not apprehended as since a self and what belongs to a self are not apprehended as true, as real, and established, then this standpoint for views, namely, this is self, this is the world. After that, I shall be permanent, everlasting, eternal, not subject to change. I shall endure as long as eternity. Would it not be an utterly and would it not be an utterly and completely foolish teaching? Yes or no? Yes. What else could it be, Venerable Sir? It would be an utterly and completely foolish teaching. Then Buddha start to teach his famous teaching. We call three rounds, impermanent, suffering, and non-self. These three characteristics, common characteristics. Then Buddha said, because what do you think? Is material form permanent or impermanent? This one we all know. Our body, how can the body be permanent, right? It's getting old every day, getting old and approaching death. So we all know, even not through insight, every day the body tells us, impermanent. Okay. So he asks, Buddha asked, is material form permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, Venerable Sir. Is what is impermanent suffering or happiness? Our body keep on decaying, changing, become sick and old. Is it happiness or suffering? Suffering. Okay, so the monk answered, suffering. Venerable Sir. Is what is impermanent suffering and subject to change fit to be regarded thus? This is mine, this I am, this myself. What's your answer? No, right? So this is very famous. I mean, if you read Buddha Sutta, almost Buddha used the same pattern. What is suffering? What is impermanent? Is it happiness or suffering? We know suffering. The body told us suffering. What is impermanent? Suffering, subject to change. Is it fit to say, it is mine, it is myself, it is I am? No. Therefore, from this statement and reasoning also, we can understand. When we see impermanent, when we practice insight meditation, when we see impermanent, then oppressed by constant change is suffering. Automatically you will feel it. Oppressed, being oppressed by constant change, you don't feel satisfaction. You just feel unsatisfactory, suffering, oppressive. This is called dukkha. Then, what is anicca? What is dukkha? What is impermanent suffering cannot be regarded as permanent self. This is very famous teaching of Buddha. So by seeing impermanent, you also see suffering. By seeing impermanent, by seeing suffering, you also see non-self. So you can experience non-self in many ways. First, by seeing impermanent, you see non-self. You see non-self. By seeing suffering, you also see non-self. By seeing cause and effect, you also see non-self. By seeing what cannot be controlled, you also see non-self. So there are many ways to approach the realization of non-self. Non-self doesn't mean that I have no more. No. This I is just a concept. What exists is five aggregates, and five aggregates produced by causes, and the causes keep on changing. Therefore, five aggregates of material form, feeling, perception, formation, and consciousness are also keep on changing. And change means impermanent. And what is impermanent is suffering. What is impermanent? Suffering cannot be regarded as mine, I am myself. Then Buddha further, to emphasize the insight, knowledge of a practitioner, Buddha go deeper. He said, Bhikkhu, any kind of material form whatsoever, whether past, future or present. Why Buddha want to mention past and future? Not only present. Nowadays, the insight knowledge, nowadays when we practice the insight meditation, vipassana, we focus on it present, 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 which I think not enough. Why? Because we still have clinging to the past, some of the sweet memory in the past, and we still looking forward to the future. We want to reborn in heaven. We want to reborn in heaven. We want to have better life and what. So we still have clinging to the past and to the future, not only present. Therefore, Buddha, in order to help the practitioner to get rid the attachment, whatsoever attachment to the past, to the future, and to the present, Buddha mentioned past, present, and future. So no attachment whatsoever. And not only that, Buddha also mentioned that internal or external body of five aggregate. Why? Because we not only attach internally, we also attach to our wife, right? To our family, to our parents, to our children. This attachment will become a great hindrance for us to progress in power. Therefore, Buddha said, we also have to discern internal by the bigot as well as external. So to get rid of all attachments are sweet. Then, far or near. So, gross or subtle, inferior or superior. Inferior can be the inferior birth, like birth in four woeful states. Superior, like birth, heavenly birth, and so on. I call superior birth. So this superior birth also, we have to contemplate it as impermanent, not a self. So not to attach to heavenly birth. Gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near. All these are 11 types. So 11 types of material form, 11 types of feeling, because feeling sometimes can be superior or inferior also. Feeling can be past. We always cling to our past, present feeling, and look forward also present future feeling, future present feeling and so on. So whether material form, feeling, perception, formation, consciousness, whether they are past, future or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, should be seen as them actually are. with proper wisdom. They are not mine. They are they are not myself. And seeing thus, if a person, a practitioner can see thus all the five aggregates, whether present, future and past, inferior, superior, far away and so on. If they can see they are not myself, not mine, then this person will become disenchanted. Nibbida, disenchanted. With material form, with feeling, with perception, with formation, with consciousness. Being disenchanted, he becomes dispassionate. He does not delight in the five aggregates anymore. He becomes dispassionate. And through dispassion, his mind is liberated. Liberated through non-clinging to the five aggregates. Having seen they are not mine, not myself. When it is liberated, there comes the knowledge. It is liberated. And he understands birth is destroyed. No more new birth. No more rebirth. Okay, so far, is it clear? Very difficult, huh? Then, little bit left. Okay. Then he said, Arahana. Then a person attained Arahan because no more birth. He fully comprehended the five aggregates are not mine, not myself. Then he is liberated through non-clinging to the five aggregates and became Arahant. So when he become Arahant, he abandoned ignorant. When we say ignorant, what it means? When we say ignorant, it is ignorant of the four noble truths. And he also abandoned the realm of births. And he abandoned craving for existence. And he also abandoned the concept I am. So he no more cherished the thought I am. Body as I am, feeling as I am, and so on. And because when the gods with Indra and Brahma seek a bhikkhu who is thus liberated in mind, they do not find anything of which they could say, the consciousness of one thus gone. I mean Arahana or Buddha, one thus gone, is supported by this or that. So any Mara, because Mara always trace any monk. Mara always trace, any monk's consciousness. Is it still supported by craving or not? But for Arahan, any gods, any Mara who want to trace the consciousness of Arahan, whether it's supported by anything or not, they cannot find. Because one does gone, one has become Arahan, his consciousness is untraceable here and now. And also another meaning is untraceable. Untraceable here and now means that the gods and Mara, they are ordinary person. For ordinary person to trace the consciousness of Arahant is not possible. So ordinary person usually will not know who is Arahant because their attainment is very high and ordinary person's consciousness just cannot understand. Only Arahant can know who is Arahant. Usually ordinary person cannot know who is Arahant. Even though an ordinary person may stay long with an Arahant, maybe for 10 years, 20 years, still he may not know who is Arahant. Because it is untraceable for ordinary person. In the ancient time, there was an Arahant who had one disciple. A young monk followed him for many, many years. So one day, two of them went for begging food, pindapata. So the young monk told the teacher, says, Venerable sir, Do you think there's any arahant in the world? And the teacher said, even though you stay with arahant, you may not know. The teacher tried to hint him, you have been staying with me for so many years and you ask me this question. This also shows that arahant's mind is untraceable. You cannot trace it if you are an ordinary person. Only arahant can know who is arahant. So if somebody asks, do you know this monk, this monk, monk, this ajahn, this monk, this shadow, is it arahant? You should answer, who am I to know? You should answer, who am I to know? Unless I become arahant, only I will know. You should not say, yes, this arahant. How you know this arahant, right? Buddha said very clearly, the consciousness of arahant is untraceable. Unless you are an arahant, you will know. So we don't simply say he is arahant, we don't say that, unless you are arahant. Okay? Okay. So the last part, Buddha said, misrepresentation of the Tathagata. So saying, when Bhikkhu say that, so saying, because so proclaiming, I have been falsely and wrongly misrepresented by some Brahmin thus. The recluse Gotama is one who leads astray. He teaches the annihilation, the destruction, the extermination of an existing being. Because Buddha said, destruction of craving, nibbana, the cessation, and so on. Therefore, Buddha was basically misrepresented by some Brahmin that he taught annihilation. He taught extermination of an existing beings. Because Brahmin cannot understand oneself. Now, to them, there's always a self. So when Buddha taught Nibbana, he taught Buddha, they misrepresent Buddha taught annihilation of being. And Buddha answered, this very famous utterance of Buddha, because I do not teach annihilation of beings, both formerly and now. What I teach is suffering and the cessation of suffering. This very famous, the words of the Buddha. Every time the Buddha was accused, abused for teaching annihilation of an being, Buddha said, no, I never teach like that. What I teach, both formerly and now, is suffering and the end of suffering. Buddha never said a person, he, she, a being. He never said the person, the end of suffering, no. What I teach is suffering and the end of suffering. Because what appears in the Buddha's mind is just conditionality. What appears in the Buddha's mind is only ultimate truth of five aggregates. Material form, feeling, perception, formation, and consciousness. And all these five factors, all these five aggregates are produced by causes. Are produced by ignorance, are produced by craving, are produced by clinging. So when this causes ignorance, craving and clinging come to cessation, then suffering ceases. So what formerly and now I teach is suffering and the cessation of suffering. So if others abuse, scold and harass the Tathagata and harass me for that, the Tathagata, the Buddha, on that account feels no annoyance, no bitterness, and no dejection of the heart. Why? Why? Because he has experienced what exists only five aggregates, not a self, not a permanent self.
Therefore, even somebody scold him, abuse him, teaching annihilation, he feels no rejection of the heart because he himself already experienced there's no self, just five aggregates. And if others honor, respect, venerate the Tathagata for that, the Tathagata on that account thinks thus, they perform such service as this for the sake of what had earlier come to be fully understood. So even some people praise Tathagata, teaching such a good Dharma, honor him, offering him, he feels no delight. Why? He feels that people are honoring the five aggregates. People are respect. People show respect to the five aggregates. There's no a self. So on that account, he didn't feel any delight or conceit and so on. Therefore, if people harass him, abuse him, he is equanimous. When people honor him, respect him, he is equanimous. Because to him, external person who abuse him, who honor him are five aggregates. He himself also five aggregates. Therefore, his mind is unshaken. Okay, the last part, Buddha said, therefore, bhikkhus, whatever is not yours, abandon it. When you have abandoned it, that will lead to you that will lead to your welfare and happiness for a long time. What is it that is not yours? The five aggregates. And Buddha gives a very good simile. He says that, Bhikkhu, what do you think? If people carry off the grass, sticks, branches and leaves in your garden, if people carry off all the fallen grass, leaves and branches in our garden, or burn them, would you think people are carrying us off or burning us? No, Venerable Sir. Why not? Okay, why not? Because that is neither ourself nor what belongs to ourselves. So too, bhikkhus, whatever is not yours, may five aggregate. Your body, your feeling, your perception, your formation and your consciousness are not yours. Abandon it. But here abandon doesn't mean that abandon the body, abandon the feeling. We cannot abandon the body, we cannot abandon the feeling, but abandon the attachment. Abandon the clinging, the craving for the body, for the feeling, for the perception, for the consciousness. Because attachment, craving are the origin of all suffering. When, like Arahant also have five aggregates, but he has no craving. Therefore, he has no mental suffering. Although he has physical suffering. Because when that body is suffering, but he has no mental suffering. Since he has abandoned all the craving to the five aggregates already. So Buddha says, Bhikkhu, whatever is not yours, abandon it. When you have abandoned it, that will lead to your welfare and happiness for a long time. I think we should stop here. Okay, any question? I expect you will have a lot of questions. Okay?
In some ways, I think that our culture thinks about this a lot.
Thinks a lot.
Thinks a lot,
yes,
about
okay.
What we're talking about.
Okay.
And I think that it's deeper, we think more deeply about it than we sometimes even reflect.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, the role of the environment. You mentioned
okay.
Self.
Okay.
And if there's no self, what is the role of the environment? Or is it influencing, people's needs, physical needs? understanding, or at least a broad understanding, that environment makes a big difference. I think one of the difficulties that we run into in thinking about this is that it seems really complex. We've got our physical nature, and we have our karma, you know, our past history, and then we have this multiplicity of environmental factors, and how are we going to put them together? So I think that we struggle. And so we try our best. I think that's kind of where we are. And one of the things I think that we do that we feel we are successful with, or at least has promise, and that is to treat each other with respect, treat people equally, and to respect the person. Now, that seems, the response to that, you know, seems really common. It seems like when people experience this treatment of equity and respect, it's not a positive way. And it makes us feel, this is, I guess, one of my points on this, is that there is a self there. There is something about each one of us that we recognize that is actually fairly common. It's probably been part of us for a very long time. And it's probably worldwide, or at least it could be. And I'm wondering what you think about that in terms of selflessness and no self. What about this feeling that maybe there really is a kind of self?
Okay. First of all, I think we have to make clear what concept and ultimate truth. Okay. Conceptually, we must accept there is a self. Conceptually. If you reject this concept convention, I don't think we can live in this world. We cannot survive in this world. If we, even this concept, that's why we say two types of truth, ultimate truth and conventional truth. So conventional truth is also considered as truth, right? Because we live in this world, we have to use this conventional truth in order to survive, in order to communicate with people, in order to live in harmony with the community and so on, in order to have to grow. Okay, but this conventional self, if it is not penetrated into ultimate truth, many suffering will follow after this conventional self. Most people are self-centered, right? Most people, an untrained mind is self-centered, and because of this self-centeredness, many problems arise. Suffering also follow once. And also because of this self, then the fear comes together with having this self. When there's no self, there's no fear, right? And because of having this self, and there is clinging to self, hatred to self, and anger, fear of death, and so on. So many problems comes, so many problems spring up because of having this conventional self. So if a person only live, always think of conventional self, his suffering will never come to an end. Therefore, he has to go one step further. Yes, I agree, I accept there's conventional self, but there's one step further, there's ultimate truth. The self is made up by these five aggregates. I have explained this five aggregate already. I'm not going to explain now. So if you can know these five aggregates are produced by causes, they are impermanent, they are suffering, they are not eternal. Not eternal like a conventional self. So whatever suffering happen, or whatever misfortune, misery happen to him, if he can contemplate ultimate truth of non-self, it's just a group of five aggregates, and he can be free from many, many suffering. He can be free from fear, anxiety, sorrow, and so on. So the purpose of Buddha's teaching, to teach non-self, is just
want to free us from suffering only. Because Buddha see how much suffering comes along with the clinging to a permanent self. When anything happens, what we like is to call it myself first. I, myself first. This self-centeredness becomes the problem for the society also. But and yet we cannot get rid of this self. If we get rid of this conventional self, we cannot survive. If there's no self, who am I speaking here? My mind will go crazy. My mind will become mad if there's no self. Right? Therefore, we have to accept both truths. One is conventional truth, but you don't let your mind stay only at conventional level. If you let your mind stay only at the conventional level, we will never free from suffering. Never. Not only that, we create more suffering to other people because of this self-centeredness. But if we can live beyond that conventional truth and reach ultimate truth, then whatever happened to us, we take it easy. Right? We take it easy, we accept it. We accept it with equanimity also. I think we should balance. We should be balanced. Huh? Not reject conventional self and yet appreciate the ultimate truth of five aggregate of non-self. Then we will be, I think, become healthy person. We can become very healthy and bring bliss and happiness to the world. We need more selfless person rather than self-centered person. I don't know whether I answering the question.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Okay. Any other question? Yes.
Well, sir, kind of a little bit on that point, the practice of like loving kindness or compassion. It kind of does require that you take the
self, the person.
It's difficult to feel compassion for feeling or the five aggregates as you break them down with insight.
Oh, okay. Okay, good question. To me, it's not difficult. For example, compassion for a suffering people, for you just see, for example, I have compassion for a very angry person. Right? Very angry person. If my compassion is toward his anger, not a person. Toward his mental factor of anger. You know? My compassion is toward the mental factor of his anger, not the person itself. And my compassion towards like Buddha, is it? Why Buddha also see everybody as five aggregate, not an existing self. But how can he have compassion? Right? So his compassion is when he sees ignorance, people's craving. He only sees ultimate truth of mental factor. He didn't see a person, this person, this person. Therefore compassion comes. So there's no conflict. Any other questions?
I think Maureen asked a question. It was about being disenchanted. Mm-hmm. And just that. I understand being disenchanted with regards to the five aggregates, but what about concern and compassion for others? Does disenchantment, but I think you already answered that.
Any other question? I expect more because this is a very difficult subject. Okay.
So you're saying Simon misperceived that this delusion of eternalism is the result of someone having the ability to see past lives? But doesn't that illusion apply universally? It's not just for people who have experienced that type of vision. So I don't see how this universal experience that I will persist is rooted in a vision of past lives and not seeing futures. Am I
Okay, if you see a future life, if he has the like arahant inside knowledge, then he will see no more arising. No more arising. Then it's not eternal anymore, right? If only existing, only the worthy beings, ordinary being, no Arya, no noble one, we always rebirth again and again. That's why it comes to him, it's eternal, as eternal. But if he has the inside knowledge of Arahant, he will see future after he passes away, there's no more new arising. Then he will not cherish the eternal view. Am I?
Well, I thought you were saying the origin of eternalism.
Yes. Yes. When they see their past life, right. When they see past life, he die and reborn in the same world again and again. Die, reborn in the same world again and again. That's why the eternality of you comes. He thought it's permanent. And this is one of the reasons. Another reason is that a person who is logician, he uses his logic to think, this self is permanent, this world is permanent. He follows his line of thought. This also can be one of the source for the eternality view. You also can refer to Dikha Nikaya, Long Discourse of the Buddha, Chapter 1, Brahma Jala Sutta. What I say just now mentioned in that sutta. Thank you.
Well, I think you just said it. I didn't understand the second reason that clearly, but I understood there are many reasons why we might have this idea that of an eternal self,
mm-hmm.
not just seeing past lives. That's just one reason. Yeah, but there are others.
What other reason do you think?
Well, you just mentioned there's
there are four.
Kind of thinking.
Yes.
That has an idea of a soul, believing it.
Mm. Yes. This is because one follow one's line of thought, one think only the way, but he didn't have inside knowledge to see clearly. So I remember while I was in New Jersey when I was teaching Abhidhamma. So one of the audience who was not Buddhist, she asked me a question. She asked me, is it why different religion preach different way? For example, the Christian preach the creator. The Buddha preach no creator. And Hindu preach Brahma, and Islam preach Allah. Why different religion preach different way? She asked me. At that time, I don't know why the insight suddenly appeared in my mind. I just simply answer, you know. And later on, I find out what my answer is correct with what Buddha said. I'm full of happiness, full of joy. So spontaneously I answer him. I said, this is because the founder of the religion, they develop different level of insight knowledge. Their wisdom are different. Some founder of the religion, their inside knowledge only see that far. So according to what he had seen so far, he proclaimed, he teach such doctrine. But for Buddha is omniscient mind. So his wisdom, you know, is all complex. You can see whatever you want to see. So his insight, his wisdom, see further than other founder of religion. That time I didn't mention Buddha and because if I say like that, people get angry with me. I said some founder of religion have better inside knowledge, have higher inside knowledge. So they can see more, they can see further. Some founder of religion see less. So he only teach what he has seen, which to him is correct, because he only sees that much, right? But other founder of religion, if their wisdom are so, if his wisdom are so sharp and so wide, vast, so he can see far. future up to the end of what, what. So he programmed another doctrine. He programmed another teaching. So I answer him. Later on, I find out the answer in the Brahmacara Sutta. Buddha say the same thing. Just like why the eternality view comes. Because this person only see like that. See, after he passes away, he arrives same in the same world again and again. He does not know there's other world also. There's Brahma world, there's hell world. He did not see. Therefore he only teach what he sees. But other people who have developed better concentration, deeper concentration and wisdom, they see even future. They see even 10 world cycle system and so on. That's why they teach differently. You should read this Brahmacara Sutta, Tika Nikaya, 62 types of wrong views. How all this wrong view comes. One by one Buddha explained to you. Very interesting. Yes, Philip?
My understanding of Hinduism is that in that system there is a permanent eternal self or soul, and that the goal ultimately is moksha. That's the term I've heard of uniting the Atma with Brahman. And from a metaphysical perspective, it seems the absolute opposite of Buddhism, where there's no self to unite with anything. And yet the goal seems the same, to be free of rebirth. And I just wondered if you could add.
I'm not very familiar with Hindu teaching, but I think the Hindu teaching, the end is not free from rebirth. I think the end is to become Brahma, is it?
It is to get out of samsara.
So now become Brahma, Brahma?
You become one with Brahman, and so when you merge with Brahman, you do not have rebirth again.
But then Brahma is eternal.
Brahman is eternal, and the soul is eternal.
So this is the difference. Because Hindu teaching also teach cycle of rebirth, karma, but the end is different. Because as Alaka say, now when they unify with the Brahma, their thought is the end of it, which is eternal. But Buddha's teaching is completely different. Buddha's teaching say the extinction of defilements, ignorance and craving, when these causes are finished, uprooted, then there's no more arising. No more arising of five aggregates. And just now I mentioned the Brahma Sutta, Brahmacara Sutta, Buddha also mentioned how the view of Mahabrahma, Hindu view, Brahma, eternal Brahma, Mahabrahma comes about. Buddha also talked about this view. He said that because this Mahabrahma, owing to his deep concentration, so after the world cycle expands, because world cycle contract and expand, after many, many eons. So when this world contract or expand, so one being born in the Brahma world, he's the only one born in the Brahma world, and he lived there very long, until he become very boring, only alone, only alone. So long lifespan, he became very boring. So one day, he had a thought: how nice if some being can come and be my companion. When he had that such thoughts, and at that moment some beings just died, passed away, and reborn in that Brahma world. And this Brahma said, they are created by me. You see, I just have a thought. How nice if some being can reappear and be my companion, and they just spring up. So all those beings are created by me. I am the creator. This is how the creator theory comes. And these beings, those beings come later after that Mahabrahma. When they appear, because heavenly beings are spontaneous birth. They are not like human beings go through mother's womb, you know. Heavenly beings are spontaneous birth. So they just come out like that as an adult. And those beings who come later than that Mahabrahma, so when he appeared, they saw Brahma, where Brahma, Mahabrahma. He saw one Mahabrahma was there. Then he thought, oh, I came later. He was there. I was created by him. We are created by him. And that Brahma, Mahabrahma also think that I am the creator. Because when I have that thought, they just come. So that is mentioned in the sutta. It's very interesting. So this is how the creator comes. Because they cannot, their wisdom can see up to that level only. They cannot see further. Therefore they think they are eternal, permanent, they are creator. So it depends on people's wisdom, how far you can see. Just like when we practice Anapanasati, we have very strong light. We have very strong light. Some people, they can shine the light up to the window there. Some people can shine the light up to the garden. Some people can shine the light up to maybe 1 mile away. They are all correct, but some people with deep, very deep concentration, his light can shine up to 10,000 worlds, like Anuruddha, who has divine eyes. Therefore, because of different level of concentration, different level of concentration and wisdom, they see differently. Doesn't mean that what they see is not correct, but some see partially, some see fully. Therefore, different founder of religion say differently because their concentration and wisdom are different. Interesting, huh? Okay. Last question. If you have. No.
So, is it true that there are multiple Buddhas, that we lose the teachings and then they arise again, another Buddha is incarnated? Is that part of the tradition?
Yes, yes. It's a Theravada tradition. So now, as long as Buddha's teaching still exists in the world, Buddha will not arise. Now Buddha's teaching is still alive, so Maitreya Buddha will not arise. Until this teaching, no more. No one knows anicca, dukkha, anatta, concentration, vipassana, no one knows all anicca, all gone already, then gradually Maitreya Buddha will come to the world. And no Buddha will arise together. No Buddha, Sammasambuddha, no two Sammasambuddha will arise together. Why? Not necessary. One is enough. One is enough. One teaching can last for 1,000 years and enough. Two, not necessary. Okay. This is lovely. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Thank you everybody for coming. There are two cardboard donation boxes on the table, one for Kwan'an Temple and one for Sister